ahead and please tell me your name and in what capacity you served during World War II.
My name is Laverne, Missouri, and I was in Fort Calvary, sergeant technician.
And were you drafted or did you enlist?
No, I enlisted in 1941. Well, at that time, they said if you enlist yourself a whole year, you can get out in a year. And of course, I enlisted in January or March of March. And went along, and of course the Japs hit Pearl Harbor, so I didn't get to come home. So I was in for the duration.
I think you're the first veteran I've interviewed who was in this
Volunteered for the
long,
service.
no, who served for the complete duration of the war. You
Oh
enlisted
yes.
before the war, actually, before the US entered the war. It looks like you said you enlisted in March of 41, and according to your paperwork here, you served until October of 1945. So you were in the service for about 4.5 years.
Oh yeah.
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 And how old were you when you enlisted?
Oh golly, I think I was 21 or a little better maybe.
Tell me a little bit about your service.
I was born on a farm, and I had enough of horses. I didn't care for the horses anymore. But when I enlisted, they told me I had to go to Fort Meade, South Dakota, and they said it was a horse outfit. When I got out there, why? They had 300 head of horses out there. I took my basic training on a horse and ended up in Germany, 15 miles south of Germany, in a tank. But then let's go back to the horses. That first year, they loaded us all up with horses and men, hauled us all down to Louisiana for maneuvers down there in the Snake Country along the Sabine River. And of course, everybody was scared of snakes, and they wouldn't let nobody sleep on a horse. You had to sleep in a tent on the ground. And then from there, we come back to Omaha, Nebraska, and stayed at Exarban overnight. And in the morning, they wanted us to parade the horses up in the city. So we was there for the parade. Then we went back to Fort Robeson, Nebraska, and we opened the gate and let all the horses out. Slapped them on the butt, and they were out in the pasture. And we went back to Fort Meade, got them mechanized. We took a little training with that, and then we went to California, Mojave Desert. We took training out there for a while that summer, and then from there they shipped us to Camp Maxey, Texas, to get ready to go overseas.
Do you remember what you were doing on the day Pearl Harbor was attacked?
We was at Fort Meade. We had basic training over with, and so we could go uptown. Sturgis was only a mile and a half from camp. And as we walked back to camp, all the lights were on. What in the heck happened? We couldn't understand how come all the lights would be on. It was about 11 o'clock at night. As soon as we got into the barracks, well, it says, Pearl Harbor got hit, Pearl Harbor. Japs hit Pearl Harbor. Well, I'll tell you, shivers went up and down my spine.
Do you remember what thoughts or emotions were running through your head?
I hate to tell you what I said. I said, oh, so and so, I'm in for the duration. Yeah, and that's the way it happened. Yeah.
So tell me about going from horses to tanks.
We just got mechanized. Everybody learned how to drive. We had tanks and jeeps and scout cars. We took training with that.
Which did you prefer, the horses or the tanks?
Jeep.
None of the above, huh? The
The
Jeep.
Jeep, tanks were fine. We had the tanks out in California, out in the desert. And it was so hot out there, it never got under 100. We had to sleep on the ground. We had two blankets. We slept on the ground, one blanket on top, yeah. And one morning I kind of wiggled my finger, and something hit me right in my finger here. And so I jumped out, and it was a scorpion. It got me right in the finger. And where I got up, well, there was another one next to me. But when I took my blanket up, there were about five more underneath the blanket. See, when it got cool at night up there where the scorpions and snakes, they'd go for anything that was warmer. The highway up there, they wouldn't let you walk on the highway because that was full of snakes. They'd come up there at night.
Geez, between the snakes in Louisiana and the scorpions and the snakes in
California,
you had enough of those buggers, I bet.
That scorpion made me sick. I had to go to the clinic. I don't know if they gave me a shot or what they did. But that spot was there for near 2 years.
Really?
Just a little red spot. It was right in there. So, of course, every time you went to a different, moved to a different place and got off, well, you had to go around and look for snakes and kill snakes. That's what it was in Louisiana. In Louisiana, killed so many snakes in the spot, they start smelling so bad, we had to move out of there, move to a different spot.
That's a lot of snakes.
There was a lot of them. Some of them snakes were the big water moccasins. There was every kind of snake you could think of there.
Mm-hmm. When were you sent overseas?
After we got back from Camp Maxey, Texas. Well, now, I don't know what year it was. We were told to go home on furlough and going overseas. And so then I get back to Camp Maxey, Texas. I got sick. So I went to the clinic, and it was appendicitis. And so I got operated on for appendicitis. And the office was getting ready to go, and they came to the hospital and said, everybody that's in the hospital don't get to go overseas. I got the chaplain over there, and he let me go overseas. They carried my baggage and my rifle and everything. But from there, we went to, started from New York. We went by train to Chicago. From Chicago, we went back west and then north. Nobody could figure it out, but they were trying to fool the enemy instead of going straight to New York. Then went up into Canada, came to New York from the north. Then was in New York for about a week or two. Then we got on the boats and went across to England. Mm. It took about 14 days to get across the ocean. And we was on an English Liberty ship, and fed us with fish and chips every day. And, of course, a lot of guys got sick. Bathrooms are all on one end. And there's a lot of guys that got sick and they was heading for the bathroom. They never made it, so it was pretty slammy before you got in there. And also they threw off over the railing. I didn't get sick too bad. I worked in the kitchen. I got a headache a few times. After we got to England, it was at night. Then we got on a train, and then we got to Chichester. And they loaded us up on trucks, and we went to the camp. And when we got to camp, there's some low, like sheep sheds here. And everybody's looking for a bathroom. Nobody could find a decent bathroom. But somebody says there's a shed over there full of pails. That's what you got to use. So everybody got to using them pails. And in the morning, here come a guy with horses, a wagon, and he loaded all that stuff up. And that's what they use out there for their gardens, fertilizer. It was in the wintertime, by golly. You had to go in there and build a little fire. And then go in there and take a little water down, about a gallon of water, so about all that was up there, take a bath. Then from there, I got to go to London a few times.
What was that like?
Oh, I thought it was nice, people. Yeah. Well, as long as we're talking to people, well, when we got to France and the people were better there than English, and then when we got to Germany, they was the best of all after the war.
Really?
Oh, yeah. This is, as you see on the street, well, you come to our place. We don't have much to eat. We have a lot to drink. We know you didn't want to fight this war. We didn't either. So the Germans realized it. But where was we? Oh, then from there we moved to Southampton. That was just across the channel. It was about 17 miles to France. There we took some training, waterproofed all our vehicles, got into landing crafts. And the landing crafts they had a big ramp on one end. The landing crafts, they'd go as far as they could go. You hit bottom, and then everybody went off. But we waterproofed our vehicles, from the bottom, about 4 feet, air and exhaust and motor and everything. Mm-hmm. We got off in about 4 feet of water under fire.
Was this on D-Day that you're talking about?
Yeah, well, a little after D-Day, yeah.
A little after D-Day.
About a few days after. One of the first first people that got over there was dismounted people. They went over there, surprised them where the cliffs were. They had to climb cliffs. They had to throw rope ladders up on the cliff and then crawl over. But that was in Omaha Beach. In Utah Beach, you could land vehicles.
Is that where you landed?
That's where we landed. Yeah,
Utah Beach. Yeah. D-Day plus two is when you landed.
Oh, it wasn't a day plus two. It was probably a day plus four or five.
Day plus like four or five. Okay.
I don't remember. It was we were one of the first ones over there. Mm-hmm. And our first mission was St. Mary Gleesh. That's the French town. It was supposed to take it, I guess, or go to that up there. And so we started from there, and we was on the road. There was a lot of trees and all over, you know. And we had a column on the road. We didn't go a mile and a half, and the column stopped up in front, and then we was getting shelled. Well, there was a Jeep in front of us, a good buddy of mine, George Smith from New York. He was a radio man. And he was in a Jeep with radios on it. And all at once we see he slumped over. Well, the shrapnel come in and hit him, killed him. And he was right in front of our tank. And somebody said, well, if the column starts to go, why we can't go, that Jeep, nobody in that Jeep, move it off. Yeah, and he told me, you got to go over there and you two guys go over there and try and push that Jeep off the road so we can get by. We finally start getting out and thought, hell, we got a tank, push the damn thing off. But the tank, and we don't have to get out and take it on any more shrapnel. We're still getting shelled. I don't remember anything about St. Mary Gleesh. And about that time, the 82nd Airborne, or 101st Airborne, dropping soldiers over there. And they were there a few days, and they was very effective. They were supposed to keep the Germans, as the Germans were coming back, they were supposed to keep the bridges intact. Don't let them blow out the bridges. So they sent our outfit over there to gather them up across the, into the enemy territory.
So you were behind enemy lines?
Oh, well, you had to. That's where they dropped the 87th Airborne.
Mm-hmm.
And so we gathered a few of them up and got them together. Then we came back.
How do you get behind enemy lines with tanks?
Just go.
Just fight your way through?
Oh, sure.
Because I was going to say, there's no sneaking around when you have a tank.
The lines, maybe it was thin over there. I don't know. I don't remember. But I know we went over there and gathered up the 82nd Airborne. And then we came back. We was a little outfit. And then they put us on point, and we was on point to cut off the Cherbourg Peninsula. See, there was a little peninsula over here, and we was on point here. Of course, the big boys, they have to stay back here too, so we don't get cut off. So we was on point, cut off the Cherbourg Peninsula, and there was a lot of German prisoners, or they gave up. By the thousands, there were a lot of them in there.
Really, by the thousands?
A few thousand in there. I don't remember exactly, but there was quite a few of them in there. And they all quit. It was tired of war anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You probably don't know, or ever hear of Chateau Terry, did you? We come back, and then we got stopped before we got to Chateau Terry. Chateau Terry, we was on the hill there. And Chateau Terry is a place where the First World War was, kind of a battle was in the First World War. The trenches, we was on the hill, we could see where the trenches were yet. They dug trenches there. Well, we finally got down into Chateau Terry, and there was three tanks down there, three Tiger tanks. That was all over there. And from there, we was heading for Paris. We was heading for Paris, but before we got to Paris, why, the enemy moved out. There's only a few snipers in there, so that they had us go around and contact the enemy again. The 4th Cavalry outfit is an outfit that keeps in contact with the enemy all the time. And if you don't know where they are, you go up and get shot at and then find out where they was at, where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way you find out where they're at. See?
That's a pretty important but tough role to fill.
Yeah. Well, I was out of the in combat zone for 337 days. We was on the front line all the time, 1,200 miles.
How do you get through that?
No bedroom or no bathroom for 337 days. Oh. Sleeping, well, you didn't sleep in building because they were zeroed in. They would get shelled at night. You slept out in the open. It wasn't very clean. No. We didn't take no showers either. Once in a while, when you got kind of quiet, you got a hold of some water, you put it in your helmet and then take your clothes off and start washing yourself down, probably using a sock for a wash rag.
So what got you through some of those days? If you can...
I'll tell you, when that guy got killed the first time we was out, my knees started shaking. It shook for about 2 weeks. My knees are shaking, I'm so scared. And then I finally made up my mind, well, if I get it today, I won't have to worry about tomorrow. And that's the way I went through. I wasn't the only one there. But we had the whole outfit was doing that.
So you just took it day by day?
Yep. Just didn't worry about it. So we went around Paris and fought by the rural. I don't remember too much after that until we got to the Hurdegon Forest. That was first part of December, I know that. We got to the Hurdegon Forest, and we lost a lot of men there. Three officers in 3 days. See, the Hurdegon Forest, when they'd shells would come in, they'd bust on top. They'd hit a branch or something, they'd bust, and all the shrapnel would go down this way. So we lost a lot of men there. So we had a big fight there, or it was pretty bad. And so finally, we moved back quite a ways because we got all shot up. Well, in between that, otherwise, we always had to move back, go back and pick up more troops, pick up a few men, you know, to fill the troops. But this was we come back, move clear back, and it was just before Christmas. And so, We got a kitchen truck that was in the rear echelon. You know, everybody's got some in the rear echelon from the front. So we moved Caron back, and we heard that they broke out. And gee, we're right there. How did they break out? Anyway, they got the kitchen truck to come up. We was going to have a turkey Christmas dinner next day. So the kitchen came up, and they unloaded all their stoves and supplies and stuff. And about that night, and about 4 o'clock in the morning, they started hollering, "Everybody get the hell out of here in 10 minutes." So we all dashed out and got off to the road and headed away. Every vehicle went wide open for about 1.5 hours, 2 hours to get away from there. They broke out here. And we was right here, parked right here, see? And so when that order came out, we went this way as fast as we could go. And then we circled around to that point where they was.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started pushing them back again. But our kitchen truck never did make it. They captured it. They ate our turkeys and Christmas dinner, and being as we was come back for Christmas dinner, we didn't have no rations. You know, rations always come from the rear. Gasoline, supplies, and rations, they always come from the rear. For 2 days that we was over here, all we had was coffee and beans for 2 days, because we didn't get our regular rations because we were going to have Christmas dinner. Then we start pushing back. And we finally, but what happened was, See the airplane, they broke out over here. And of course, when you break out, you have to have supplies, gas and food and rations, all that. But our airplanes are knocking all their supplies out, and they run out of supplies. So they were done. There was much fight to them. I'll tell you about them horses. We'll go back to the horses. When we was over there in Germany fighting the war, here come big cans of wheat meat, about that big around, about that high. It's called a beef. I knew what we were eating. It's good. It was something better than we was eating for the same thing all the time. They butchered them horses. As we were fighting to go back, we weren't supposed to go too fast because we got strafed by our own planes. I was out of the tank when the first plane was coming, strafing. So I tried to get up in the tank. And I knew I couldn't make it all the way into the turret. I was on the side, so I jumped back down and got into the tank. I'd done that three times. Then finally somebody says, "Hollie, don't shoot, they're ours, they're ours." I was trying to get up at an aircraft gun. See, each tank had an aircraft gun. But they was ordered to bomb certain sections, and we was in the wrong section. We was too far in. They was going back while we, you know.
Were the tanks a key part of the Battle of the Bulge?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
How long were you in battle then, like that, trying to push the...
337 days, pretty much a whole year. 1,200 miles where we traveled from the invasion area. Clear across France, Belgium, and Germany. We took different towns. There's one town in Belgium by the name of Spa. I got pictures of it. We took that town, and the people, we camped there for about 2 or 3 days. Anyway, they took pictures of us being there, and I got pictures of that. They were so happy, everybody was smiling, you know. Of course, they cleaned it out, but then in 3 days, we started going out of town, and we hit the enemy right away. They was right on the other side of town.
Really?
Yeah. They was there all the time, but they didn't know it.
Did they know that the Americans were there, or was it a matter of you were both ignorant of each other?
You know, they always pulled back and made a line.
So you encountered a line.
In France, we couldn't get no place. It was just at a standstill, fighting every day, and don't gain nothing. So the bombers, we got word that the bombers are going to bomb the front line, that we're supposed to move back 3 miles. Everybody move back 3 miles. They're going to bomb the front line and all the soldiers' line. But what happened was they got the same message for some reason or another. When we moved back 3 miles, they moved up 3 miles and they bombed everything behind them. And as we done that, why the bombers were supposed to bomb the front line. They wanted to bomb the front line. So we moved back. They told us to move back 3 miles. And as we did, the Germans moved up 3 miles. And then they bombed everything behind.
Oh,
then
so
when
they
we
didn't.
Going to take off, we ran into all kinds of stuff.
So it didn't work. The tactic didn't work.
They got the same message. There was message just. They got the message about as fast. Bombers, there were so many bombers, they bombed everything in front of us. They lowered everything. You know, in Berlin, they about lowered everything there. Before we got there, church steeples. As we come going along, there's always enemy soldiers up in the church steeples, you know, so they could see what's coming and all that stuff. That's the first thing that we hit when we hit with those artillery shells. Those tanks. We had artillery shells on the tanks.
What was your job in the tank? Did you actually have a tank?
I was armor, gun armor. I was at the guns, kept them in shape. The big guns, I had to always inspect barrels because if they'd fire too many times, they'd crack. And I could pull them off and replace the barrel.
So you were responsible?
Panoramic sights, all the smaller guns, I was in charge of all the guns.
So you were responsible for all the guns on the tanks.
Yep,
How
big
many
department.
tanks were you responsible for then?
Six.
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 And how many guns total was that?
A lot of machine guns and rifles. Well, everybody had carried a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And there was about over 100 men in each troop. And that was, everybody had a gun. And a machine gun. I had at night, it was kind of scary. And I had done a lot of guard. And I happened to run onto an American soldier that had a Tommy gun, a dead soldier. He had a Tommy gun laying by him, so I took the Tommy gun, and I used the Tommy gun at night instead of that carbine I was carrying. That would just spray, you know, on guard I'd use it. In the daytime, I didn't use it in the daytime. At night, I used it.
Were you in the forest, or were the tanks on the other side going into, going behind German lines?
That's when we first got into France, the hedgerows. They had little fields like a block square, and on top of the, for like a fence, there was bushes and trees growing. You could be right next to the enemy, you didn't know it, because the hedgerows would be thick, you know.
So it sounds to me like it was really a fight for every
mile.
I was going to say, every square mile, it was just a fight for every mile.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So you went across France and into
France,
Germany?
Belgium, and Germany.
And where did you stop?
We got up to the Siegfried Line. Nobody could go through because they had a line there that they had cemented in the rails off a railroad track about that high. And in between was cement built pillars. No vehicle could go through. Back further inside Germany, they had pillboxes. Then pillboxes was pillboxes were all covered with dirt and grass growing over them. They was in a hill, like, and they had big guns were sticking out through the slats. And you couldn't touch them no place. The planes over there, they couldn't bomb them out because there's too much ground on top of them, and then cemented in anyway. The only way they got that started is at night. They sent dismounted men over there with that hand grenades. They sneak over there and they stick the hand, throw the hand, stick the hand grenades in through the slats, and that's the way they got started.
And that's the way you took them out.
Yeah.
How long did it take your outfit to get across France?
Across France? Well, I don't know. It took 337 days clear across, so I don't know how long it took across that exactly.
So at the end of the 337 days, you were in Berlin, or just in
we
Germany?
We saw Berlin in a tank. And we was on our way into Berlin. We were sitting down the road when a couple of vehicles come from behind and stopped and wanted to know what we was doing. And it was a general. This is at the end of the war, really. And well, he said we're heading for Berlin. He says, I'll tell you what, the war is just about over. It's over. No use going into Berlin and getting killed on the last day. You stay right here. Let the Russians clean them out. There was a bunch of snipers. The Russians had to clean the snipers out. Otherwise, it was level, too.
What would you like someone of my generation, my age, to understand about World War II, or more specifically, your war experience? If I could come away from this interview understanding one thing about what happened and your experience, what would that be? What would you like me to know and understand?
We won the war, yeah. The way we took Aachen, we finally got across the Siegfried Line. I was in an outfit that the first city that was fell to the Allies. I was in that outfit. Anyway, the first thing you done, there's a lot of soldiers in there. You captured a trolley car. garage up on the hill, coming off on a raise. We were fighting a while, finally some corporal having a take one, we put some dynamite in that car, a railroad car, that trolley car, and sent it down into town. Somebody else said, why don't we fill all them damn cars and send them into town? That's what they done. They start hauling in dynamite. And the first one, they put on a longer fuse, and then clear down into town and blew up. I got a picture, I think, on one of them trolley cars with a V on it, the V-13. They sent 13, that was a big city. They sent a trolley car down there, each one with a shorter fuse to pull the dynamite. Then after, I remember after a few days afterward, while I went through there, there was just the whole half a block was just clear, everything cleared out. One place there was a pole, telephone pole setting up there, a pair of trolley cars, the wheels were setting up on top of that pole. Mm. That was really, and imagine that that done a lot, saved a lot of time cleaning them out.
Do you think your experience in World War II changed you? Or how did it change you, might be a better question.
I don't know, I suppose, made a man out of me, I suppose. But I don't like what's going on just now. Everything's going wrong. They're doing everything wrong. We didn't have to be in Iraq. They didn't declare war on us. Bush said, got to put Hussein in jail. He killed a lot of people. Well, since Hussein's in jail, they're still killing people. Mm-hmm. Who's going to take the blame for that?
Mm. The veteran that I was interviewing before you, Edward, and his son, Jerry. I asked Edward, because I had heard this before, that there was this belief that World War II was the war to end all wars. Did you ever hear that or believe that?
Oh, yeah, I've heard it, yeah.
Did you believe that while you were fighting, for every square mile as you guys moved forward in your tanks?
I suppose, I don't know, I didn't want my kids to be doing any more fighting, that's for sure.
Who did you have at home waiting for you?
After the war, I got a picture of a girlfriend that I had after the war. We was there 3 months after the war waiting for her to go home in Frankfurt, Germany. Well, it was a little town next to Frankfurt. There was Kelsterbach on the Rhine River. I met her down there. And I got a big picture of her that I took home with her, but she didn't know she was coming up here. Everybody you met down there was coming to the United States. And she was coming too. Well, anyway, I was with her. Well, that was after the war, every night. And then we got noticed that we was going to move out. So some of us moved out. And we didn't know where we was going. We went about 60 miles. And in the morning, there was about 3 bicycles out there. And she was one of them. She followed us. Isn't that something?
That is.
We didn't know where the hell we was going. They knew it. And so, well, there were so many that I changed my name. My name was Benji, or just Benji, or if they wanted the full name, my name was Lester Taft from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. That's what the name she got, too. I don't know.
So you didn't give her your
name? I had a girlfriend here in Wagner afterward.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, after I come back, went out the farm, my dad's farm.
So you came back.
And I had four children, boy and a girl, two boys, and then twin girls. And since then, my son had twins, and my daughter had twins.
Could I ask you one more thing about the war? If you can think back to maybe one or two of the toughest days you had, those 300 plus days that you were in combat every day. On the toughest of those days, what got you through the day?
Well, I suppose it was the first few days when my knees were shaking so bad. Like I told you, I told myself, well, if I get it today, I won't have to worry about tomorrow anymore. I didn't figure on coming back, not in that outfit.
Really? You just assumed you were going to get killed in action?
Yeah.
So, Okay, so then you survived. So was there anything, did you make any kind of promise to yourself then? Because I survived this and I didn't think I would.
No, well,
No.
not really, not that I remember, no. No.
Nope. So it was all pretty much cut and dried for you. You were
Yes.
doing your service. You were doing what you had to do. Thank you so much, Laverne, for sharing your stories
Okay.
with me. And
Yeah.
thank you for your
Thank
service
you
to our
for listening.
country.